3 hours in radio. You're with Kilmeade and Friends.
The call for the formation of a national salvation government is a coup against the Constitution and the political process.
This is not an intelligence failure, it's a policy failure.
The White House is lying.
The commissioner was being disingenuous. Of course she broke laws. Of course she broke regulations.
We've had four acting commissioners in a row who've trotted up to Congress and lied.
It's the biggest hurdle that we have to take now with Germany. America.
After winning the first game, they give this feeling that they are one team, and we can see all that enthusiasm.
Hey, let's talk about the economy. Things seem to be getting better.
The economy is growing.
In the first term, the administration would blame everything on Bush, and now it's on climate.
The presidency may not be imploding, but his favorability and approval numbers sure are.
The IRS has historically only preserved backup takes for 6 months.
All right. The government agency whose entire business model relies on forcing Americans to live as borderline hoarders only keeps their for 6 months?
Welcome back, everyone. Kilmeade and Friends. And how right is that? It's kind of strange to see, you know, The Daily Show more than the Colbert Report, kind of having to take on the president when it comes to the IRS and other things, but not full bore like they would of Donald Rumsfeld or Vice President Cheney. Joining us now, it's my privilege to bring on the author of Things That Matter. Yes, the same author that had Things That Matter, that book became number one for a generation, number one in the country, and spent the last 9 months on the bestseller list, and nobody is more surprised than him because he had to be convinced to write this book. Charles Krauthammer, welcome back.
You're giving away my secrets, Brian, but you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't want to write it. I was convinced because I thought I could do it in a week. So much for doing it in a week. But, yeah, it's turned out great. And I'm really surprised and happy with what's happened to it.
It is. You know, it's probably even more gratifying. It's what you think. So people are not only buying your book, they're buying your thoughts and your, you know, it's your lifelong of experience and your opinions on the topics of the day. So that's got to be doubly gratifying.
And it really is. You know, the last chapter of the book is something I wrote in 2009, November 2009, about decline as a choice, about Obama's foreign policy. This is at the very beginning. We're now 5 years later, where I basically said, looking at what he's doing, listening to what he's saying in his speeches and the kinds of things he's been doing with Russia and in the Middle East, it is utterly predictable that we are going to have these collapses around the world. It wasn't hard to see. And now 5 years later, it's all, you know, to our real horror, it's happening all over the world, things falling apart. And, you know, so when that happens and you can see some vindication, I mean, I wish I'd been wrong on that. I truly do as an American. But when you get some vindication for what you wrote and that it's in hard covers, it's quite gratifying.
Charles, I want to bring it to somebody else who wrote a book. I think it's number one, Hillary Clinton. She got a $14 million advance.
Yes.
She sold 85,000 1 week. Cut in half the next week. It's not gaining momentum. There's no way you're going to make back $14 million in advance if you're Simon & Schuster. But how do you explain one of the most famous faces in the country writing a book with all her fervent fans not having the type of brisk sales that anyone predicted? What's going on here? Is there something to read into it?
It's a lousy book. Not that I've read it, because life is short. But as Pat Moynihan once said, who was asked if he'd read a certain book, he said, yes, but not personally. So I've read all the reviews, and I have a pretty good notion of what's in it, and it's basically a campaign book, a political book, a cover-your-ass book, and, you know, try and explain her decisions in a way that puts her in a favorable position. But you compared with the Bob Gates book, which had explosive stuff, you know, the defense secretary, his disagreements with Obama, his feelings about how we handle Afghanistan. That was a real, genuine book by a guy who was never coming back, right? We all knew that Gates was leaving office. That was it, so he could speak the truth. Everyone knows that with Clinton, this is like everything else she does. Everything she says, everything she writes, everything she does is crafted to present a certain image. So you never have a sense that you're getting the real story, which is why the sales of this book, which is really a committee book. I don't. I suppose she's read it, but she surely didn't write it. It's doing so badly.
I guess so. And so far, I'm amazed by the unforced errors. For example, if you're going to separate yourself and Benghazi and in Russia and the reset, okay, you're going to get some controversy. But to get all caught up in the fact that she's rich and started out poor, I don't even know. It's unbelievable she can't talk herself out of this.
Look, I have been saying for months, for a long time now, she is a weak presidential candidate. Everybody on the Republican side is terrified. Everybody on the Democratic side thinks she's going to march to the White House. Well, they said that in 2008, and then this guy comes out of nowhere in Illinois and knocks her off in the primaries. So all this thing about the vaunted, yes, there is a machine, yes, she's going to raise $1 billion, yes, she's got her husband, yes, she's got all these assets. But in the end, what do people think about you, your sincerity, your likability? She certainly has experience, but what kind of experience? Has there been any great success? I think she showed in the first 2 weeks in the rollout of her book with very little pressure on her. She didn't, as you say, these are unforced errors, Brian. She can't handle a question about her income. How is she going to do in the complicated stuff? I do think that a lot of Democrats are probably rethinking in their head how automatic her nomination should be. I still think it's hers for the asking. But whether or not they really are going to do as well as they think they are with Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket.
Yeah, very interesting because, you know, you don't know what Governor Cuomo is going to do, Governor O'Malley is going to do.
They're all waiting in the wings, and Elizabeth Warren, you know, they've got their left. So, I mean, there's a whole second team waiting to see if there's going to be an opening. And I think right now there's no indication that she does not want the nomination. The book tour is obviously the rollout of her campaign. Unless that changes, the others won't get in. But I think there's going to be some trepidation.
Talking to Charles Krauthammer, author of Things That Matter, 9 months on the bestseller list. I want to move forward and talk to ISIS, this group that has come out of nowhere. According to the White House yesterday, spent some time with the Undersecretary of State and the Deputy Secretary of Defense explaining to senators that this ISIS group, they came out of nowhere and their success couldn't have been predicted. But that is just not true. Here is the deputy CIA director saying this on Sunday to Nora O'Donnell on Face the Nation, Cut 3.
I've read, you know, several times that this is an intelligence failure. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Al-Qaeda in Iraq was essentially defeated when the U.S. military left at the end of 2011. And the intelligence community monitored the growth of Al-Qaeda post-2011 in great detail with intelligence reporting, with analysis. We made very clear that this group was becoming more and more dangerous.
And Mike Rogers said they were out in right in plain as day. We could have bombed them to tomorrow, and the administration wouldn't even answer his calls to act because the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee couldn't get their attention. And maybe that's part of the reason he's retiring. You know, Charles, I don't lie. I know the CIA is not perfect. And they don't have a job where they're allowed to take a bow when they are perfect. But I don't like them seeing become the scapegoat because the administration refuses to act.
And the administration simply refuses to ever acknowledge the truth about its failures. It's either George Bush, or the tsunami in Japan, or it's climate change, or now they blame it on intelligence. I think that what we heard from the CIA is absolutely right. Of course it wasn't an intelligence failure. We all knew that ISIS had taken over large swaths of Syria. It had this safe haven. It was governing it like a caliphate. It had ambitions. It called itself ISIS, after all, for God's sake. The Islamic State of Syria and Iraq. I mean, it didn't hide any of this. So to say, oh, we didn't know, and this is Obama, as usual, with every scandal, IRS, Benghazi, whatever it is, eavesdropping, NSA, he read about it in the papers, you know. Of course they knew this was going on. The fact is the policy. The policy was decided by Obama. He promised to end the war in Iraq, whatever that means, quote unquote, which means to leave the field. But he didn't end the war. He had a promise he wanted to keep. He kept it despite the fact that his military commanders were begging him to leave a residual force, a substantial one, 10 to 20,000, so that we could stabilize Iraq, we could mediate between the factions, we could secure all the gains that had been achieved at such a high cost in blood and treasure. And the irony is that Obama himself today makes the case for the kind of thing he didn't do in Iraq, for doing it now in Afghanistan. When he made his trip to Afghanistan, what did he tell the troops? We need a status of forces agreement, meaning we need an agreement with Afghanistan of leaving behind a contingent of Americans, as he said, in order to make sure that we don't lose the gains that we have achieved at such high cost. So if that's the case in Afghanistan, why didn't it apply to Iraq? Because in Iraq, he did it for political reasons. And he just wanted to have it on his resume, particularly going into the election. He chose the date end of 2011. Oh, what a coincidence. So he could campaign in 2012. I ended the war. He didn't end the war. He lost the war. He threw away the gains. David Petraeus ended the war, and Obama blew it.
And now General Keane has been, the White House reached out to him. We know he's the architect and the mentor to David Petraeus, one of the great acquisitions. For me, Fox News is getting him here. The White House reached out to him, and his recommendation essentially is to begin with, get Petraeus and Crocker back, and you'll begin to get some respect back. Will they actually do that? First off, do you think they will do that? Are they that desperate?
No, they won't, because Obama is too arrogant. And by appointing people of substance, Crocker, who was a fantastic U.S. ambassador in Iraq, in Baghdad, who helped to broker relations between the factions brilliantly at a very hard time in the middle of the Civil War, and of course Petraeus, who rescued a war, a lost war, one of the great turnarounds in American military history, probably the greatest turnaround since the Incheon landing in the Korean War, and that's more than half a century. These are two men of great substance. Obama, look around. This administration, you see a single person in his national security apparatus of substance, of stature. No one. He surrounds himself with midgets. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that. I think I've just offended a large number. Maybe there are.
We know what you mean, intellectual.
These are people, you mean, who don't count for anything. He's running the show by himself. He's so arrogant, he thinks he knows the Middle East. He thinks he understands the history. He thinks he has a special connection with Islamic leaders because of his years as a child in Indonesia. He has said that. And he's been a complete failure. I mean, there is failure in the Middle East, from one end of the Middle East to the other, in Libya, in Egypt, in Syria, in Iraq, everywhere, in the Israeli relationship. The Saudis are so furious at Obama for the way he went over their heads to try to appease Iran. They turned down a seat in the UN Security Council, which has never happened in the 60 years of the UN's history.
So, Charles,
he's got wreckage all around.
Charles, we're gonna have a few minutes when we get back to talk more and to finish out this half hour. We appreciate your time. It's been spent the last 9 months on the bestseller list. The author of Things That Matter, Charles Krauthammer, returns in just a moment.
Don't agree with Brian?
What's he doing? What's he thinking?
Engage in some friendly fire. You're with Kilmeade and Friends.